Okay, so I'm going to be talking about some assertion-driven analyses that enable compile-time checking as well as runtime error recovery. This is basically work done by my student, Martin Alkarabi. I hope everybody is familiar with the notion of an assertion. Programmers have used it for several decades now. There have been two primary uses of assertions. One was for runtime checks. You specify some interesting properties as an assertion, and they are evaluated at runtime. And also, assertions provide a useful way of documenting certain properties of code. But there's no reason why assertions should just be limited to these two kinds of uses. Assertions really are a form of lightweight form of specifications. What makes them really nice and appealing is that they're written using the underlying programming language. One project that we are working on is to explore a much broader use of assertions than has been done before. And our vision is that we can convince developers to actually assert properties of their designs before they actually code the program. And then we like to apply some deep semantic static analyses that can check conformance of code as it is developed to the designs that are asserted. And once we have some executable code, we'd of course like to systematically test it, basically using the same assertions. Since we have assertions, we'd like to do some runtime monitoring for erroneous executions. The focus of this talk is going to be this last bullet, where we are exploring techniques for recovering from errors that are detected by assertion violations. Okay, so here is an overview of our approach to assertion-based repair, and I will make some connections with other uses of assertions that are listed on the previous slide. So traditionally, an assertion violation indicates a corruption in program state. And a typical approach to handle a violation is that you terminate the program, debug it if it's possible, and re-execute it. There are times when such terminate, debug, reboot approach might not be feasible. One example is if persistent data gets corrupted. So what we are exploring is to handle a violation in a different way, and instead of terminating the program, repairing or mutating the state of the program to transform the erroneous state into one which satisfies the assertion and let the program continue to execute. So the idea is that the repair tries to bring the system or data in an acceptable state, hopefully without the need to reboot and allow it to continue to execute. So what kind of data and what kind of assertions are we talking about? So here are some example structures which represent the heap that we'd like to be able to repair. So one example is that of red-black trees. So if your program is manipulating such a data structure and something goes wrong, we'd like to be able to repair it using a description of the structural constraints which are assertive. So it's worth noting that such data structures have complex structural constraints. For example, one constraint is that the number of black nodes from root to a leaf should be the same on any path along the tree. But these data structures and constraints don't just arise in the context of textbook structures. They also arise in various other applications, such as the intentional naming system, which is a resource discovery architecture for mobile networks, where clients and services can be described using a hierarchical arrangement of attributes and values. So this is once again a structure. There are some structural constraints, for example, acyclicity in the backbone of the data structure and so forth. And we would like to be able to repair such structures if some integrity constraint is violated. Okay, so let me say a bit more about these structural integrity constraints. In the context of programs which manipulate these dynamically allocated structures, violation of an integrity constraint is a likely form of corruption. Assertions are able to quite easily express such constraints. For example, for acyclicity, you could write a graph traversal which takes an input structure, traverses it, returns true or false, whether the graph is acyclic or not. And when we talk about object-oriented programs, such as those written in Java, The integrity constraints are often called class invariants and many times written as repo k predicates, which good programming practice advocates that developers should write in any case as defensive checks, for example, to check whether a constructor is creating an object correctly. These integrity constraints enable automated checking. In previous work, we showed how to use them for test generation. And in some cases, they can also be synthesized so that the user does not actually have to explicitly write them, because they could get a bit verbose. Okay, so let me give you an example of what I mean by repair. So here is a structure which violates several constraints of a binary search tree. First of all, you can see that the red arrows indicate some directed cycles. And clearly, a tree should not have any of these cycles. Another problem in this tree is that it does not satisfy the binary search constraints. The keys are not in the right order. So what we would like to do is take such a structure, take a description of the constraints, and generate something like that, which satisfies the integrity constraints of a binary search tree. Just to give you another example, that we're basically breaking cycles. We'd also like to be able to repair circular structures, or essentially arbitrarily complex. Yeah.
Question: are you claiming that this repaired binary tree is the only possible binary tree which will repair? Otherwise,
no. No. Okay. That's a great question. So you know, and that brings us to this point that repair, the way we are doing, is heuristic in nature. And what we'd like to do is, we try to preserve the reachability of the elements from the root. But yes, this is not the only repaired binary search tree. We would like to be able to generate one of the repaired binary search trees. And I'll show you the precise algorithm which gets us from something like this to something like that. It performs a systematic search space in the neighborhood of structures of this structure and mutates it systematically to get to that one. But yes, I'm not saying that this is the only possible repaired structure, because clearly we have either a broken program or some external influence which corrupted our heap. And now we don't have a description of what the perfect heap should have been.
But in that case, wouldn't such a repair maybe, I think it may be worse than not repair?
Oh, it's yes, and repair is extremely dangerous. So we should be careful when we do it. And that's why, when I'll get to later in the talk, what we do is we generate logs of repairs. So they basically abstract the concrete repair actions that were done to list for the user to see exactly what was repaired. And those logs actually are not just useful in telling the user how the structure was repaired, but they can also help the user debug their program. But yes, you're absolutely right that repair is dangerous, so pay attention. Okay, so here is another structure. This is supposed to be a doubly linked circular list. And in a circular list, the solid edges are the next pointers. So they should form a circle, but this guy is wrong because it's pointing back, and we'd really like it to point here. And also these lists have previous pointers, so here some previous pointer is also wrong. So we'd like such a structure to be repaired into something like this over here. Okay, so that gives you a feel of what we mean by the repair of these data structures. So to make it slightly more precise, given a structure S and a repo k method, which basically represents the structure integrity constraints, where S violates this method, we'd like to generate another structure, S prime, which satisfies the constraints and is similar to S. And for the moment, we leave similarity as a heuristic notion. We have some, our algorithm tries to preserve the reachability of the data in the original structure. And that's what we mean by similarity. But it is possible that in the worst case, the repair may generate a structure which is quite different from the original one. And indeed, you can give it a repo k which is not satisfiable. These repo k's are arbitrary assertions. You can just say false. I mean, there's no way we can generate a structure that satisfies false. So a lot depends on the satisfiability of the repo k. And as I'll show you, the algorithm really executes these assertions and follows the execution. So the way you write an assertion is also extremely important. So I want to emphasize that we do not aim to generate a structure that a hypothetical correct program would have generated. We don't have such a program available. But the aim is to generate a structure that is within an acceptable envelope of computation. So we treat the assertion as essentially a necessary condition, which if it is satisfied, the program can continue to execute, which means that the assertions might end up being extremely detailed. And indeed, we could view a more general form of assertion really as a specification similar to a post condition, which could even relate the structure before the repair to the structure after the repair, which is much like relating the input to a method to the output of a method. Although our tools don't yet support such arbitrary assertions. Yeah? Sadish?
So I'm just wondering, you said that you don't have a hypothetical connect program, but you want to somehow fix up the runtime state of a program. And the runtime state could be, in some sense, large, because that depends on the input size. So how would you contrast it to things like sketching, where you might, in fact, your search space could be the search space of mutations on the program itself, and then you are somehow independent of the size of the input?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. I think on my 24th slide, I have just one bullet on that, which is that we have... So what you're referring to is a very nice insight, and we also observed that some time back, that what we could do is we could take basically a sketch and where the program is missing some crucial things, and the program maybe compiles but does not generate the right answer. So then, to take that sketch and take the specification, or a human assertion in this case, and use the assertion to repair the program states, but then transform those repair actions into the blanks, fill in the blanks for the sketch. And I had a master student who did a thesis on basically program repair about 2 years ago. So there the idea was to take these concrete repair actions which you did on the concrete heap of the program, but now these repair actions tell you, for example, the next field was mutated. And then you can look at how the local variables of the program point to within the heap, and then transform those concrete repair actions into abstract repair actions, which are basically program statements, which if you had in the program, would have repaired for you. So yeah, that's a very good insight. But we haven't really explored it beyond that master's thesis so far. Okay, so how does the repair algorithm work? It uses the violated assertion as a basis of performing repair. And it uses this property that it's an assertion, it can execute it. So it's going to execute the assertion and monitor the execution to try and identify a component which is necessarily corrupt. So that enables a systematic search of a neighborhood of the corrupt structure, and it's based on a hybrid form of symbolic execution where we start from a concrete structure, but then as we need to repair it, we make some of the fields symbolic, and then try and determine what concrete values would have satisfied the constraints. Okay, so I'll probably skip over some of the background. We do use forward symbolic execution. It's a well-known technique that has existed for at least 3 decades. The basic idea is that you explore program paths, and for each path you build a path condition and check the satisfiability of conditions. There have been loads of applications of symbolic execution. Recently, in the last 3, 4, 5 years, it has seen a renewed interest because the constraint solvers have become more powerful, and now symbolic execution can actually scale to programs of interesting sizes and have check interesting properties. So I won't go over the details of this. I'm just assuming that everybody here is somewhat comfortable with symbolic execution as a way of exploring the execution tree of a program. Okay, so how do we do repair? Here is the general outline of the algorithm. To repair a structure S, which violates its integrity constraints, we execute the repoque or the assertion and monitor it. One thing we monitor is the order in which the object fields of the structure are accessed. And that's going to allow us to backtrack in an effective way the search, because otherwise we'd end up exploring all possible structures and there are bazillions of them. So when execution evaluates to false, we backtrack the search and modify the value of the last field accessed. And that's how we prune a large number of possible candidate structures. The way we modify the field is to a new value, which could be a symbolic value, especially if it's a data field of a primitive type. And we add a constraint that the new value should not be equal to the original one because we have just tried the original one. And then we re-execute rep OK. So the core idea of backtracking on the last field access is from the Korat test generation algorithm. And the combination with symbolic execution is inspired by the generalized symbolic execution work from 4 years ago, 5 years ago. So here is how the field values are updated to repair the structure. So if it's a primitive field, let's say it had previously the value v, we assign it a symbolic value s, and after the path condition, the constraint that the symbolic value is not the same as v. If it's a reference field, we don't treat it symbolically. Instead, we do a systematic concrete exploration. We non-deterministically assign it to null if the original value is non-null. Otherwise, another possibility is to assign it to an object of a compatible type that we have already encountered in this exploration. So that allows us to take care of various possibilities of aliasings. And the third option is to assign it to a new object, which we haven't seen before. And of course, we assign it to null, for example, if it originally wasn't null. So we want to try different values from before. Okay, so to make some of these things more concrete, let me give you an example. And this is one of our favorite examples for 10 years, binary search tree. So the binary tree has a size, and a tree has a root node. Node is a static inner class. Every node has an integer element as well as a left and a right child. So let's say you have this method rep OK, which expresses the structural integrity constraints. This guy traverses on the input structure, returns true if they are satisfied, returns false otherwise. Let's say here we have a method add, which takes some element and adds that element to the tree. And at the beginning of the method, we have some assertion which checks whether the current structure of the tree is acyclic as well as satisfies the binary search constraints and so forth. So that's how we could use insertion. Let's say it's violated, and this was the tree. It somehow got mutated, and we have some sharing of nodes, which is not legal because it should be acyclic. Here is the detailed rep OK. It is a standard worklist-based graph traversal algorithm, which keeps track of a set of visited nodes and ensures that the algorithm doesn't go in infinite loops. And whenever it detects some sharing, for example, when it adds to the set of visited nodes some node which already is in the set, it returns false. And then it also checks in the end that the number of nodes that it visited from the root should be the value of the size field. So it basically does the standard integrity checks on an input data structure and returns false if it detects sharing or inconsistency in size, and otherwise it returns true. Okay, so let's execute this method on that input. So what we're going to see is like in what order the fields are accessed. So the first field that's accessed is the root field right in the beginning. So we build a list of field accesses. The next field that's accessed is inside this while loop down here when we access the left of the root. And after that, we access the right of the root, and at that point, we detect sharing, and the method returns false. So that's the order in which the fields are accessed. So now what we are going to do is we are going to backtrack on the last field that was accessed, which was the right field of node N0.
Question.
Yeah?
So how did you get this code automatically from the rep OK function?
This is what the user writes. This is the assertion, basically. So they said
the user likes the assertion in this form.
Yeah, in Java. So here is what backtracking gives us. So here was our batch structure. The last field access was n0.write here, sort of a linearization of the structure. So look at the value of write. So at this point, it's n1. So now we are going to do systematic backtracking. So we are going to try other possibilities for best right field. And one such possibility, if you remember that list of field assignments, is null, which was strategically the first value we tried. So once we set it to null, we get a very nice looking tree. And it does indeed satisfy rep OK. OK, so that sort of hopefully gives you an idea of like one step of the repair algorithm. It does not always terminate by performing one mutation, I should point out. We have an implementation which is written in Java. It has a search component which implements the systematic backtracking, symbolic execution, which provides the library classes needed to symbolically execute a program, and it also does program instrumentation to translate a given rep OK method to enable monitoring of the field accesses, and it is able to handle structures with fairly complex constraints. We also have implemented several optimizations, some of which I will get to briefly. And these optimizations increase the efficiency, effectiveness, as well as the usefulness. I've already mentioned these abstract repair logs. These, in our experience, are extremely useful. We also support some abstraction functions, which allow users to more conveniently compare pre and post states, so that you don't have to actually look at the huge big graphs, but you can look at an abstraction, for example, the set of elements in the structure before repair. Okay, and to give you an idea of performance, I won't show you some big tables or impressive graphs, but we have so far evaluated on about half a dozen textbook data structures. We injected a small number of faults, about less than 10, and the algorithm can repair structures with a few hundred nodes in less than 10 seconds. So this is the very core basic algorithm that I've shown you, so which does not really scale to, you know, structures with 10,000 or 100,000 nodes. But we have several very interesting optimizations which we are working on, and some of which we have completed, which do allow us to scale to structures with thousands of nodes. Okay, so I will skip over some of this stuff to describe some of these more interesting recent stuff. So what I've described so far was in our ASC paper last year. At the Uppsala paper, we explored how you can use static analysis to improve the efficiency of repair. And in particular, we use Cahoon and McKinley's recurrent field analysis, which allows us to prioritize repair actions based on the field types. And we can classify fields as recurrent or non-recurrent. And if you recall from the non-deterministic assignment of reference fields, we were first doing null, and then one of the existing objects, and then a new object. But using this analysis, we can prioritize them differently for whether a field is recurrent or not. And that allows us to scale to structures which are 10 times larger than those few hundred nodes that we had with our core algorithm. Another recent project that we did, or Boston did, is on showing how repair enables generation of large data structures. So in our previous work from ISTA 2002, when we had the Korat test generator, or even before that when we had the test error generator using SAT solvers, we were able to enumerate test inputs from constraints, but the inputs were of a very small sizes, maybe 10 nodes, 12 nodes at most. But now what we have is, we have a new way of generating large structures where the idea is that you can generate a structure of the desired size without caring about the constraints. So we generate a random graph that has the reachability that we desire, and then we repair that using our repair algorithm. So that allows us to repair fairly large object graphs which satisfy these rep OKs, and we can actually generate graphs with thousands of nodes. And here was the bullet I was talking about, the Satish's question. So we have explored, but this is a very preliminary exploration of translating the repair actions into code which could actually perform the repair. I want to mention one related work, which is the closest related. So traditionally, repair was done mostly using dedicated repair routines. But about 4 or 5 years ago, Dembski and Reinhardt came up with the first constraint-based repair framework, where the idea was to take these data structure invariants, which are written in a first-order logic, which they defined, to describe these integrity constraints, and then use violation of those constraints as a method of repairing using an ad hoc technique.
Okay, so to summarize, because I think I am out of my well out of my time. Okay, so
I can maybe leave this slide. So we believe assertions are really useful, and we should extract more value out of them. Developers are most comfortable writing them. If you ask them what specification language would they use, they'd probably go for Java or C or whatever the program is written in. what I've shown you is an algorithm for repairing, which was based on symbolic execution and uses a backtracking search. But we believe this work opens a promising direction of future work where it may be possible to have a unified framework for verification as well as error recovery. So for the same assertions, you can have a whole host of analyses ranging from checking conformance using static analyses to assertions which express properties of designs, going down to test generation and systematic testing, and going all the way through to error recovery. Okay, I'll finish.
One of the slides you said that you could start with a randomly generated graph and then sort
yes.
of beat it to shape by repairing it.
Yes, right there. Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, what is the insight of start with an input generator and just synthesize what you want?
Yeah, okay, very good question. So the insight there is that if you want a large structure, getting a connected graph of that size is a very basic problem because of the systematic exploration. Because you try null and then you try one existing thing and then you try a new thing. So if you started from a graph that had the right size, you've already solved a big part of the constraint. So what we do is we basically partition the constraints into constraint on size, constraint on structure, and constraint on data. And that's the order in which we solve them. And random generation of graphs is extremely efficient. So, you know, getting a graph with 10,000 nodes at random is very easy. But then we repair to break, let's say, the cycles. And then final step is to populate the data values to get the binary search constraints right. Yeah?
So if some nodes have become unreachable in the data structure?
Yes. Nodes? So, yeah. So that's a good question. And so theoretically, it is possible that some nodes become unreachable. You mean for the repair? Or for
in the one that needs to be repaired.
Yes. So at the point when you evaluate the assertion, if something is not reachable from the root pointers that you have access to, that thing cannot be brought back. That thing cannot be brought back concretely, that you won't get the exact same nodes back, but if your constraint, let's say, requires that the structure should have at least 10 nodes, and you're starting off with something that has 9, you will get to a structure with 10 nodes because we allow creation of nodes. And if there are data constraints on those nodes, new data values will go in there, but then the question is, what are those the data values that you want, or are they just spurious values which should not be there? But yes, you're right. If you have lost the root pointers, then we currently don't have a way of bringing those nodes back into the structure. Yeah?
Just to have a suggestion or question to consider, coming back to the question that there's no one
right.
Correct. Okay. In order to find one is likely to be the right one, one may use perhaps some knowledge about the last one or several actions that were done,
yeah.
And picking up some logic of what kind of mistakes people can make.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And so we haven't actually looked into that much, but one way we have perhaps considered that is using some incremental repair techniques, which I haven't mentioned here, but they don't actually, we don't look back into the last mutations that the program made, and maybe if the last field change was previous or next, we try and repair that one first, because that might be the likely corruption. But yes, that is certainly possible. But we have explored looking at the behavior of RepoK to make its execution more efficient, because if you notice, these assertions are executed several times, because whenever we change a field, we re-execute the assertion basically from the beginning on the whole structure.
which is fine if you have 10, 20, 100, maybe 500 nodes. But once you have 10,000 nodes or 100,000 nodes, it takes about 1 second for one execution of repo K. And you cannot execute them even 1,000 times then. So there we have looked at monitoring the order in which fields are accessed and storing some intermediate states and then backtracking in a much more efficient way.
Somewhat like concolic execution.
Yeah.
You're using the existing program path, the one that got you there, and after that you try to diversify a little.
Yes, yes. And one, I guess one technical difference is this backtracking based on field accesses. So whereas in concolic execution, you'd backtrack based on the control flow graph. And you'll try to negate, for example, let's look at this repo K, and what's going to happen is, let's say you return false over here once you added this write. So you basically try and say that, okay, let's see, how do we make this true? But now you see there's a library call to a set implementation. It's not clear like what's going to happen if you had a full-blown symbolic execution over here, and what the constraint would be on this add method. And what we have is we are putting in concrete values, and also, we are backtracking based on the field accesses earlier, backtracking on the last field that was accessed, which might not be the case if you're just doing concolic execution without observing the field accesses. And this really is, I mean, what we're doing is, depends how familiar you are with the Kurat algorithm, but what we are doing to a first approximation, or what the core repair algorithm, our most basic repair algorithm is, it's executing the Kurat algorithm on not from a default initial structure, but from a given broken structure. And then it's doing symbolic execution for data fields. But we never treat these pointers symbolically. So our systematic exploration always tries explicit concrete values over there. Yeah?
So why'd you make that choice?
So what we are, well, one reason is for these library methods such as this one, because then we don't care how complicated these library implementations are. Because we are putting in concrete values, we get concrete results. So that's one reason. But another one is, in a way, what we are doing is, even if we are building these constraints on references, you'll need to solve them. So what we are doing is, we are solving them on the fly. Because otherwise, you'd have to build them first, and in a separate step, solve them using the same thing. Because you have to systematically explore them. There's no other way of resolving them. And what we are doing is, we are doing the systematic exploration as we come across the constraints. Yeah?
Can I ask a nasty question?
Yeah.
So you were saying that there's this technique that you put in, that the one bullet that there was a question before, and you said this is too preliminary. But I see the TR, and the date is 2006. So have you been trying to publish that since 2006?
No. So one problem I often run into is that I could get some sympathy vote if I said yes. But my main problem is that I have many of these master students who just go away. For example, this guy went to Microsoft, one of my 3 or 4 students who I've lost there. But it's just a matter of not having enough hands, really. This idea started off with a discussion with Andreas. He doesn't even listen to what I'm talking about. So this was like, I think at ICSI 2005, when we were just chatting over coffee and then discussing about repair, and of course, he works on why programs fail and how to fix them. So then we started chatting, and then I convinced one student to do some implementation of transforming these concrete repair actions into some program statements.
Still working.
Yeah.
I think you should thank Safraz very much.